Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
come in with cure. There's no sorrow on earth that heaven cannot heal. On this 4th of July, I'm praying for those that lost mother, sister, and brother. There's no sorrow on earth that heaven cannot heal. Now, if you want to go to the seed of Abraham, website.com. If you got to need your plant seed, go to Cash Out and hit TT. And right away, you'll go to Cash Out. But I want to pray for you and you that lost loved ones. Lady called says you lost her son. Brother driving down the street got shot. It's too much of violence and killing going on. Stop the killing. Say that we had 5 accidents with black on black. Each one of them was problems where black shot other blacks. One was in Illinois. One was in Boston. One was in Minnesota. One was in Ohio. And each incident with blacks coming together, as they come together, 4 or 5 people got shot, 2 or 3 people got killed. Over the weekend, we didn't have 7 people to get killed just in random shootings. So we got to stop killing each other. And the way we got to do it is call on the Almighty God and Congress. Democrats and Republicans got to step up to the plate. Stop saying, well, we want things that we got to shut these guns down. That's in Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana, throughout this country. Ain't no other country in the world do more killing than America. And we're going into the 4th of July. And it's going to be shooting and killing going on. But I want to say to you, Father God, become the God of Abraham. I'm praying for you, Mother Mary. I'm praying for you, Mary Hawkins. I'm praying for you, Pearl Jackson. I'm praying for you, Pearl Johnson. I'm also praying every letter, every telephone call, every letter. God is able to deliver you. Deborah, I'm praying for you. Lisa, I'm praying for you and Joe. Y'all call me. I ain't heard from you. I want you to continue to call me because it's the things I want to share with you that I want to share personally with you, you and you. I got a testimony for everyone that called. I got something to tell you. Get your pencil and paper, put it down. Put down Psalms 127. Put down Exodus 14:14, put down Revelation 21. God is getting ready to do something in this season, and I want you to be a part of it. And I'm talking about the bullet of the ballot. We already got the ballot and the bullet, and we're killing each other. We got to turn this stuff around.
400 years is actually doing our people a disservice. In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime for any Negro leader to teach our people not to do something to protect ourselves, especially in the face of the violence that is inflicted upon us by the white people here in America. And whenever you teach a man to turn the other cheek or to be nonviolent, what you're actually doing is disarming the victim of white brutality. You're robbing him of his right to defend himself. In fact, the only time it's intelligent to be nonviolent is when you're dealing with someone else who's nonviolent. I'm nonviolent with those who are nonviolent with me. This is intelligent. But just as you see other people doing whatever is necessary to protect themselves, it's time today for the 22 million Afro-Americans to feel free to do whatever is necessary to protect ourselves. Take, for an example, in the Constitution, it gives a person the right to have a rifle or a shotgun. And in areas in this country where the government has proven itself either unwilling or unable to defend the black people, it is time for the black man to stand up and start defending himself. Not to go out and initiate acts of aggression against whites or initiate acts of aggression against anyone, but in areas where we see that the government will not protect us or defend us or find those who have brutalized us and made us the victims for the past 400 years, then it is time for us to do whatever is necessary to defend ourselves. And it should be emphasized that by this, I don't mean that we should go out and look for trouble or start trouble or initiate acts of aggression. But we should feel that we are within our human rights, our civil rights, and within the rights of intelligence to do whatever is necessary when we are attacked to defend ourselves. In fact, the best thing to teach our people is never to be the aggressor, never to look for trouble. But anytime anyone makes any effort to brutalize us or to inflict wounds upon us, we should feel that we are within our rights to do whatever is necessary to repel them. Do nothing unto anyone, but always do whatever is necessary to keep others from doing to you, which they've been doing for the past 400 years, making us the victims of brutality. But is it not a fact, Minister, that people like Dr. Martin Luther King, who have advocated nonviolence, have been successful with their nonviolent moves? Well, they've been successful in going to jail. They've been successful in becoming the victims of police dogs and police clubs and water hoses. If Dr. Martin Luther King feels that this is the best way to gain freedom, justice, and equality for our people in this country, well and good. I have no criticism of him whatsoever, but I think that the time has come now where the masses of black people feel that nonviolence shouldn't be taught to us unless it's also taught to the white people in this country. And black people shouldn't be taught to turn the other cheek unless the white people are taught to turn the other cheek. Now, if Dr. Martin Luther King can be so successful in disarming Negroes, they should send him to Russia and let him disarm the Russians. Let him disarm some of these other countries where...
I still have to take the stand that Dr. King has been a degree successful with the non-violent movement. Now, you better take the March on Washington, for instance. Was this not something that exemplified the feeling of the Negro and made everyone very, very happy?
It depends on whether or not anything was gotten out of it. In fact, yes, it probably made them happy. Most of the people I saw involved in the March on Washington looked very, very happy. In fact, they looked too happy to be involved in a Negro revolt. So that insofar as the March on Washington producing meaningful results, most of the masses of black people today and this year are beginning to see where nothing came of it other than the fact that it gave many of the bourgeois Negroes a chance to feel that they were doing something without really having to do anything. It became a status symbol. Just like going to the Kentucky Derby is a status symbol for those who know nothing about horses. They like to be able to say they went to the Kentucky Derby and they can't tell a horse from a cow. Or the Rose Bowl game. They like to be able to say they went to the Rose Bowl game and they don't know a football from a baseball. But the fact that they can say they went to the Rose Bowl game is a status symbol. Or the fact that they can say they went to the Kentucky Derby is a status symbol. So many Negroes took the opportunity to say that they were in the March on Washington. Not that it produced anything. Or not that they really felt that they were involved in a Negro revolution, but it gave them a chance to say, I was there. It was a status symbol. But status symbols don't take us out of the alleys and out of the ghettos and out of the slums. Status symbols don't remove segregated school systems. Status symbols don't get meaningful civil rights legislation. So when it comes to the March on Washington and all of these other nonviolent approaches, they were good in their day. But this is a new day, and it's a new Negro.
But we will have to agree, Minister Malcolm, that the March on Washington was the forerunner to the creation of, or at least to the presentment of, the Civil Rights Bill. Without this type of approach, I doubt seriously that the Civil Rights Bill would have even been entered onto the floor.
A horse can enter into the race and come so far from the finish line that you don't even know that that horse was in the race. And since the March on Washington was designed to produce meaningful civil rights legislation, and if I recall, I heard several of the leaders of it point out that we'll be back if the bill meets with any kind of opposition come September. They said this in August. Now, September passed, and the bill, it didn't even come up. October passed, November passed, December passed, the year passed, everything passed, and the bill hasn't been passed yet.
Are you saying that you feel a more violent approach to it because this bill will be passed?
It's not a case of violence. And I think that our people should never let themselves be trapped intellectually into thinking that whenever they do something to defend themselves against the violence of the white man, that they're being violent.
But you're advocating violence.
No, we're advocating the necessity of black people defending themselves against the violence of the white man, because the American government has already proven itself either unable or unwilling to defend us, as it should do.
Well, the white man hasn't gone out to create any marches, nor has he gone out to do anything that would make the people in the community feel that he was opposed by law to their thinking.
No, all he has done is fix his police dogs on innocent black women and babies. All he has done is put his fire hoses on innocent women and children, black women and children.
That's right.
Or all he has done is shoot Medgar Evers in the back.
Right.
Or he has bombed the church in Birmingham, Alabama, and murdered four innocent little girls.
That's right.
Or he has shot down young boys from their bicycle as they were riding innocently through the street.
That's
all he has done.
Well, you feel that this is a cause for the Negro to take on the violent act?
It's not a case of the Negro taking on a violent act, but it's a case of the Negro doing what is necessary to defend himself against the violent acts of the white.
Right.
Since the government has refused to defend the Negro. The church was bombed and the government has done nothing about it. Medgar Evers was murdered and the government has done nothing about it. Emmett Till and Charles Max Potter were murdered and the government has done nothing about it. But at the same time, the government is in South Vietnam trying to tell them what to do. The government is in Berlin trying to tell them what to do. The government is in Africa trying to tell them what to do. But it cannot get its own people here in Mississippi and Alabama and New York City and tell them what to do.
Right. Mr. Malcolm X discusses human or civil rights.
Mr. Malcolm, I'd like to know why you place so much emphasis on calling the freedom struggle among Afro-Americans in this country a struggle for human rights rather than civil rights.
Well, most of our people don't even know the meaning of civil rights. And by not knowing what it is they're actually trying to get, it has eluded us for the past 100 years. Civil rights is supposed to mean citizenship. When you have civil rights, you have citizenship. When you have citizenship, you have civil rights. And if the 22 million Afro-Americans were actually citizens of this country, it wouldn't be necessary to pass any kind of additional legislation to include us in the Constitution. If you notice, whenever the people come here from Europe, they can come here from Poland, which is a communist country. They don't need any legislation to make this Polish person a citizen. They don't need any additional civil rights legislation to make the refugees from Hungary who come here a citizen. They don't need any additional legislation to make anyone who comes to this country a citizen. But when it comes to the rights of the black people who are the descendants of slaves, then immediately new legislation is necessary. So this right here implies that when the Constitution was written, in some way or other, it must have excluded those of us who were slaves at that time. And because we were excluded from the Constitution when it was originally written, today they have to amend it in order to include us. But if you notice, the Civil War didn't include us in the Constitution. Had the Civil War included us in the Constitution, we would be citizens today. Had the amendments even to the Constitution actually included us, we would be citizens today. If the Supreme Court desegregation decision way back in 1954 was sufficient to include us into the jurisdiction of the Constitution, all of our problems would be solved today. So there's something about civil rights that makes it almost impossible for us to get it. So you have to know the difference between civil rights and human rights. As long as our people are begging for civil rights or they are labeling their struggle for freedom, justice, and equality under the label of civil rights, then what they do is leave us in the jurisdiction of Uncle Sam's court. And it's actually Uncle Sam who is guilty of all of the violation of our rights that have taken place in this country. So when you go to Uncle Sam to try and get some kind of redress over civil rights violations, you're taking your case to the man who's responsible for the violation. So the only way our people can really get some meaningful results, it has to be taken out of Uncle Sam's hands and taken into a world court, in the world court that has been set up to listen to the complaints of human rights violations in the United Nations. Human rights are international, and civil rights come within the jurisdiction of the country where these rights are violated. Some people may wonder why our brothers from Africa and Asia have not spoken out more boldly or without compromise on the injustices that the 22 million Afro-Americans experience in this country. They can't speak out. As long as these injustices are labeled by us as civil rights, then this remains a domestic issue, and none of our people from abroad, because of protocol, can become involved in Uncle Sam's domestic problems. So all the civil rights groups have to do is expand the struggle from civil rights to human rights. And once it is expanded to the level of human rights, then this puts us in the position to charge Uncle Sam with violating the UN Charter on Human Rights. We can take it before the United Nations, and other nations of this earth can then side with us and indict Uncle Sam for the mistreatment of 22 million Afro-Americans. The very fact that the struggle of the black people in South Africa, or I should say the injustices that have been experienced by black people in South Africa have come before the UN, or the injustices experienced by our own people, again, in Angola has been brought before the UN. Even the oppression of the Hungarians has been brought before the UN. The plight of the Jews in Soviet Russia, and there's only 3 million of them in Russia, has been brought before the UN. Well, then why hasn't the problem of the 22 million Afro-Americans come before the United Nations? It has not come before them because the leaders of the civil rights struggle don't understand what civil rights actually amount to. When they are mature to the point where they can see that their present struggle has kept them under Uncle Sam's jurisdiction and Uncle Sam is not morally capable of solving this problem, then they will shift this out of the courts of Uncle Sam and take it to the courts of the United Nations on the level of human rights and we'll get some kind of meaningful result. As long as we keep it at the civil rights level, we alienate the support of our brothers and sisters in Africa and Asia. But when we shift it to the level of human rights, we have the support of billions of black, brown, red, and yellow people from all over this earth behind us.
The United States is a great world power and has in the past exercised a lot of control and power within the United Nations. So how can you expect to wage a successful battle against such a powerful country in a world court?
Well, whenever you believe in what the United States has taught us concerning democracy, which means one voice, one vote, this is good because in the present world setup, world governmental setup, as is represented by the United Nations, each country there has one vote, which means that no matter how wealthy a nation is, it only has one vote. And no matter how poor a nation is, it still has one vote. So the ballot actually equalizes the poor man and the rich man. Back when the United Nations was set up, it consisted largely of white nations, because most of the dark nations were then colonized and weren't independent. Since the dark nations have gained their independence and have emerged on the scene, today in the UN, you have more dark nations who are in a position to vote in a bloc than you have white nations. So that we have a situation now where the grouping together of the dark nations who formerly were colonized has given them enough political power to offset the military power and prestige of these mighty white nations of the West. And it is therefore, it is only in the United Nations where everyone has the ballot, where everyone has equal votes, that the plight of the black man can be given a just hearing and the weight of the dark world can become down on our side and balance the scales on our side. Whenever you take it into the white man's court, you never will get justice because the white man is the guilty one who committed the crime in the first place. It's like taking your case from the wolf to the fox to take it to Washington, D.C.
I don't think I wholeheartedly go along with that, Mr. Malcolm. I have some appreciation for your discussion in regards to the human right and the civil right. But here in America, as a band of Negroes, I think the most progressive thinking that we could possibly attain is civil rights. This is the thing that we want. This is the thing that we hope to get. This is the thing that we're going out to fight for. Without our civil rights, the human rights, and the rest of the elements are non-entities as far as
human rights come before civil rights. Human
that
rights.
May be so, but the civil rights are an important factor.
You can never get civil rights until you have human rights. Human rights represent the right to be a human being. Whenever you are respected and recognized as a human being, your civil rights are automatic.
But if we get civil rights, we are human beings.
No, you have to get the recognition of human rights first. This is why people can come here from Africa and Asia and immediately are able to benefit from what the Constitution stands for, because they are recognized as a human being when they touch the shores of North America. But the black people in this country, all of our human characteristics were destroyed by slavery. Our language was destroyed. Our history was destroyed. Our culture was destroyed. And then the white man taught us that we were savages in the jungle and living at a subhuman level. And for this reason, when they put the Constitution together, they classified our people as three-fifths of a man, which meant subhuman, not a complete human being. And once our human characteristics were completely destroyed, this gave them justification for treating us like we were animals. And then, and it also justified their selling us from plantation to plantation like you sell a horse and a cow and a bag of wheat. Why, George Washington himself, historically, is on record as having sold or having traded a black man for a keg of molasses, which shows you he didn't regard that black man as a human being. If the black man's human rights had been respected, he never could have been a slave here in America. And if his human rights had been restored by the Emancipation Proclamation, automatically we would have been citizens right after the Civil War. So we must be regarded as human. Our human rights must be respected before we can ever be regarded as citizens
and our civil rights be respected. D.C. to come to their rescue, and the only word that they got out of Washington was that no stature had been violated that would allow Washington to intercede, to inject itself into that dispute. But as long as the Negroes in Birmingham, Alabama were being nonviolent and were turning the other cheek, then there was nothing the government in Washington could do about it. As long as brutal attacks, the government in Washington professed that it could do nothing about it. But on that night, when the Negroes exploded, that Saturday night, and began to react against the whites who had been brutalizing them, then the government in Washington, D.C. sent troops in. And they didn't send troops in to protect Negroes, because Negroes had been the victims of brutality for several weeks. They sent troops into Birmingham, Alabama, only when the lives and the property of the white racists and segregationists in Alabama were being threatened.
But specifically as regards to the church, the bombing, and the children, of course, which was an atrocity beyond belief, the government, in all fairness, is not able to fight that case in that it happened within the city and its city government. State government.
Well, the government saw fit to send the football coach down to investigate it. And since when do governments send football coaches to investigate atrocities?
Right.
Whenever this same government sees its interest being threatened in Cyprus or threatened in the Congo or threatened in the Middle East, they look for diplomats of international stature.
Right.
But these same diplomats who are sent abroad to settle the differences of other people, if they were sent into Georgia or Alabama or Mississippi, why, they would hang their diplomat on a tree.
Well, don't you think that Dr. King and all the rest of the very wonderful leaders throughout the state of Alabama, don't you think that they have tried and made sufficient enough effort in the handling of this case?
Well, Dr. King and many of the other wonderful leaders who are in the South and other parts of the country have been doing the best that they could, but their odds against them are so great on the part of the white racists and the white supremacists, and they work in conjunction with many of the white racists here in the North who hold as liberals. So we can see today that it is almost impossible for Dr. King to win. So we're going to need some help on a broader scale from a more powerful source.
What source do you think that this particular help is needed from?
As our doctor brothers and sisters in Africa and Asia and Latin America awaken and become enlightened and emerge and get their independence and are able to get in positions of power, they look here in America and see the plight of their little doctor brother, the 22 million Afro-Americans. And as they see our plight and their sympathy and feeling for us increases, sooner or later, some kind of move has to be made to bring an end to this unjust situation that 22 million...
22 million African Americans. That's what we are. Africans who are in America. You nothing but Africans. Nothing but Africans. Can't you get father calling yourself an African and calling yourself a Negro? African don't catch no hell. You the only one catch hell. They don't have to pass civil rights bills for Africans. Africans can go anywhere they want. Right now, all you got to do is tie your head up. Go anywhere you want. Just stop being a Negro. Change your name to Huga the Booger. his intelligence every day.
Whether you're educated or illiterate, whether you live on the boulevard or in the alley, you're going to catch hell just like I am.
We're all in the same boat. And we all are going to catch the same hell from the same man. Just happens to be a white man.
All of us have suffered here in this country political oppression at the hands of the white man, economic exploitation at the hands of the white man, and social degradation at the hands of the white man. Now, in speaking like this doesn't mean that we're anti-white, but it does mean we're anti-exploitation. We're anti-degradation. And if the white man doesn't want us to be anti him, let him stop oppressing and exploiting and degrading. I'm not a politician, not even a student of politics. In fact, I'm not a student of much of anything. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I don't even consider myself an American. You and I were Americans, there'd be no problem. As long as you and I have been over here, we aren't Americans yet. Well, I am one who doesn't believe in deluding myself. I'm not going to sit at your table and what you eat with nothing on my plate and call myself a diner.
System was constructed to produce.
The system of this country cannot produce freedom for an Afro-American. This economic system, this political system, this social system, this system, period. It is impossible for it, as it stands, to produce freedom right now for the black man in this country. It's impossible. And if ever a chicken did produce a duck egg, I'm quite sure you'd say that it was certainly a revolutionary.
Well, we're justified in seeking civil rights if it means equality of opportunity, because all we're doing there is trying to collect for our investment. Our mothers and fathers invested sweat and blood. 310 years we worked in this country without a dime in return. I mean, without a dime in return. You let the white man walk around here talking about how rich this country is, but you never stop to think how it got rich so quick. It got rich, you made it rich. You take the people who are in this audience right now, they're poor, we're all poor, as individuals. Our weekly salary individually amounts to hardly anything. But if you take the salary of everyone in here collectively, it'll fill up a whole lot of baskets. It's a lot of wealth. If you can collect the wages of just these people right here for a year, you'll be rich, richer than rich. When you look at it like that, think how rich Uncle Sam had to become. Not for this handful, but millions of black people, your and my mother and father, who didn't work an eight-hour shift, but work from can't see in the morning until can't see at night. And work for nothing. Making the white man rich. Making Uncle Sam rich. This is our investment. This is our contribution. Our blood. Not only did we give of our free labor, we gave of our blood. Every time he had a call to arms, we were the first ones in uniform. We died on every battlefield the white man had. We have made a greater sacrifice than anybody who's standing up in America today. We have made a greater contribution and have collected less. Have collected less. Civil rights to those of us whose philosophy is black nationalism means give it to us now. Don't even wait next year. Give it to us yesterday. And that's not fast enough. All of these crackers, and that's what they are, crackers, they belong to the Democratic Party. That's the party they belong to.
Same one you belong to. Same one you support. Same one you say is going to get you this and get you that. Why, the base of the Democratic Party is in the South. It's the foundation of its authority is in the South. The head of the Democratic Party is sitting in the White House. He could have gotten Mrs. Hamer in Atlantic City. He could have opened up his mouth and had her seated. Hubert Humphrey could have opened his mouth and had her seated. Wagner, the mayor right here, could have opened up his mouth and used his weight and had her seated. Don't be talking about some crackers down in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia. They're all of them are playing the same game. Lyndon B. Johnson is the head of the cracker party. Now, I don't want to be stepping on toes or saying things that you didn't think I was going to say, but don't ever, ever, ever call me up here to talk about Mississippi. It's controlled right up here from the north. Mississippi is controlled from the north. Alabama is controlled from the north. These northern crackers are in cahoots with the southern crackers. Only these northern crackers smile in your face and show you their teeth. And they stick the knife in your back when you turn around. You at least know what that man down there is doing, and you know how to deal with it. So all I say is this. This is all I say. That when you start talking about one, talk about the other.
When you start worrying about the part or the piece, worry about the whole. And if this piece is no good, the entire pie is no good, because it all comes out of the same place and it's made up out of the same ingredients.
Article number 2 of the Constitutional Amendment provides you and me the right to own a rifle or a shotgun. It's constitutionally legal to own a shotgun or a rifle. This doesn't mean you're going to get a rifle and form battalions and go out looking for white folks, although you'll be within your rights. If the white man doesn't want the black man buying rifles and shotguns, then let the government do its job. That's all. And don't let the white man come to you and ask you, what do you think about what Malcolm said? Why, you old Uncle Tom?
Designed to get certain results. It's designed to keep you alive.
It's designed to bring about victory. Why? We just can't say that victory has been brought about. Let me tell you something. I was over in Africa, and I read what they did to James. They said that they beat that black one to death. They shot the other two. They said they beat every bone was broken. Now, you know what? I think people who tell our people to be nonviolent are almost agents of the people of the planet. Up until 1959, Africa was dominated by the colonial powers, and by the colonial powers of Europe having complete control over Africa, they projected the image of Africa negative. They projected Africa always in a negative light. Jungle, savage, cannibal, nothing civilized. And when, and naturally, it was so negative until it was negative to you and me. And you and I began to hate it. We didn't want anybody to tell us anything about Africa, much less call us an African. And in hating Africa and hating the African, we ended up even hating ourselves without even realizing it. Because you can't hate the roots of a tree and not hate the tree. You can't hate your origin and not end up hating yourself. You can't hate Africa and not hate yourself. And you show me one of these people over here who have been thoroughly brainwashed, who has a negative attitude toward Africa, and I'll show you one that has a negative attitude toward himself. You can't have a negative attitude toward yourself, a positive attitude toward yourself.
Listen, yes, Hippocrates wasn't born until 333 B.C. And when we see Hippocrates for the first time, he is in Africa, in Egypt and Nubia, studying medicine.
That's right.
Which is the father of... Because one time, this institution... and all of the other black institutions, and I hope that you forgive me for the term black because many of us have passed that stage. But nevertheless, I said black because I think that if Jesus was here celebrating, you would actually have to say the same thing. Unless we do not know where Jesus came from. I was reading a book and I wanted to know what should I tell these people when I come, and I noticed that the vast majority of the people here are women. And I noticed that the pastor must be very busy because everybody here is Mrs. Somebody. I was trying to figure which one I'm going to take home, but I can't take home any. But then it says, don't mess with the sheep until you check with the shepherd. I came to celebrate with you your second 32nd celebration. I came to celebrate with you even the first celebration. The first celebration of a person who later at Calvary became the deity of your religion. I came to celebrate because when I was looking in the book today, there was a song that came by my mind and it shocked me. It says, make me whiter than snow, Lord. I wonder how could that be, looking as I do. And then I looked in the picture, I said, I want some pictures to show the people what I mean. And so I got all the picture Bibles and I couldn't find one looking like me, not even an angel. And I said, well, wait, no, I better speak to my people about the little few things. It seems it says somewhere in the book he had hair like lamb's wool.
Yeah.
Oh, I know you don't know who I'm talking about. That's where you're hit. And then I read the book again and it said his mother brought him into Africa. Of course your book don't say Africa. It says Egypt, but the last time I saw Egypt, it was still in Africa. because Herod was about to kill him. And then he said, let me go back further and deal with this thing that you're here to celebrate. Then I came to the point where it says the Ten Commandments by an African named Moses. His religion being Jewish. And somebody said to me, what do you mean an African named Moses? There was only one Moses, the black Moses, Isaac Hayes. And I said, I am speaking about the only kind of Moses mentioned in the book of Exodus, an African born in the city of Goshen, on the Nile. So I said, it's easy for me. I'm coming, actually, to a homecoming celebration. Now, I'm not going to mess with theology. I'm not going to mess with that. And a man here does that very well. And like they says, when you go to cook the daughter, don't mess with the mama. Looking in this, what I'm going to celebrate, I think of some names. Absalom Jones, as he bolted the white church and went in and discovered and founded his own black church, the Black Episcopal Church. I thought of Richard Allen, as he bolted the white church and found his own African Methodist Episcopal Church. Then I started to think, well, where does the Baptist come in? And I remember the name Palmer, when Palmer said, yes, they are black churches, but they do not speak to the little fellow no more than the white church, so I will start the Black Baptist Church so I can speak to everyone. This was the time when the black church was a revolutionary church, was a church that housed such names as Henry Highland Garnett, not Turner, Denmark, Beasley. So John the Truth. And others. Even David Walker, who had made the mass appeal, along with Frederick Douglass and so many others. The names of these men and women stand significantly on my mouth as I speak to you this afternoon, because they too remembered that it was not slavery that brought Christianity to you. You brought Christianity to Europe. Paul did not create Christianity. Paul was trying to explain an African, Asian religion to the Romans. And he could only explain it in terms which the Romans knew. Slavery was nothing that brought Christianity to you. The church started in Egypt with Pantheus and Boethius. Ethiopia had a Christian religion and a Christian church 150 years before Rome knew what Christianity was. Those are your people I'm talking about.
Yes.
I am speaking about a religion that came out of the bowels of Central Africa. Because when we look at the Book of the Dead, the pyramid texts and the Chaldean texts and the Osirian drama, the 147 negative confessions that set the foundation for the Ten Commandments. When I look at Akhenaten, otherwise called Amenhotep IV, and his teaching of monotheism before another African named Moses was born, I could only rejoice in your second 32nd birthday today. To think of the fact that you, the people, where the Bible says, and the third river, this is Genesis, mind you, and the third river flows through the land of Ethiopia, and that river is Halivah.
Right.
And then you say, when you look in the mirror, you don't like what you see. This is a history. Your homecoming today, your celebration today, reaches out much farther than what it may seem. Certainly, when we speak of the Nile Valley, we must think and remember that it was there that the infant Jesus was held, was given haven. Just think back for one moment that Jimmy Carter President, I understood, sent the United States Army, the Air Force and the Navy, to look for a little blonde, blue-eyed boy among you. And they searched every family, every little boy, and didn't find that blonde, blue-eyed boy. It must mean one thing. That boy was not blonde and blue-eyed in the first place. Oh, he was a chameleon and turned black.
All right.
I'm talking about Jesus. Probably you may never have heard of him mentioned in this way, because it would seem to me that you have not heard of the Aquarian Gospel, or you might not have heard of those books that were removed in the Nicene Conference that was held in 325 A.D. when Rome changed Christianity to Christendom. Quite a difference. One has to remember, as I look around and see these beautiful women, I remember three basically precious black women like yourselves. Those who were the first to die in the name of Jesus. A place called Carthage, now called Morocco. Felicita, Nymphano, and Perpetua. The first to die in the name of Jesus the Christ. Look what I said, the Christ. The Romans had not yet stopped saying the anointed. We used to say Jesus the Christ, Joshua Christus. The Romans changed that. They couldn't understand what we were doing at all. They couldn't understand anymore, so that they told us that they give us philosophy, that the Greeks give us philosophy, when in fact there wasn't a single Greek. In history until 833, when Homer wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey. And Homer said that even the god Apollo and the god Zeus came from Ethiopia. In other words, the Europeans were saying that those of us who now are like the invisible man were the ones who even brought them the concept of a god. They say that African people, that we do not have philosophy. All we have is the blues. No, beat the blues now. It's very good. Sing it sometimes. But they forgot that from the first so-called Greek philosopher, Thales, to the last of the Greek philosophers, Socrates, and the central one, the most noted of them, Socrates, came to Africa, to your ancestors and mine, to learn philosophy, only to go back to become the father of it. It's no different than Benny Goodman going to Duke Ellington to learn to play jazz and become the king of jazz.
All right.
All right. Let us not forget it was your ancestors when there were seven bishops of North Africa and seven patriarchs. There wasn't one in Rome yet. The other day you read that the Pope of the Roman Catholic Church from Poland was going from Rome to Poland to look at the picture of the black Madonna and child.
All right.
Here she is, the black Madonna and child. Here she is over there. Here she is over there. The Pope was going to look at the statue of the black Madonna and child. He was going to look at the black Mary and a black child named Jesus. Isn't it strange that when you sing in church, you don't lay back and sing, close your eyes, and see yourself? Rather strange, isn't it?
Well.
But then to speak like this, you say, well, we don't want to hear that. I can't say it because we are in a church centering, but you know, they say a nigga is.
Well,
let's leave it like that. And why would we say that? We say it because this part of our history, we do not know. Thus, the people who gave to the world Christianity is not being told that it's only slavery why they got Christianity. The Bible did not say, and Rome shall stretch forth her hand unto God. It says, and Ethiopia shall stretch forth her hand unto God. we are celebrating the 32nd birthday. Let's celebrate it all the way. Let's go to the grandmother of Luxor, where your ancestors and mine started the concept of religion, of the deity, when they started to conceive that man could not be here solely by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Automatically, just double the space, that man must have had some sort of a physical as well as a spiritual beginning. It is along the Nile that your ancestors decided, and from there at the grandmother of Luxor, in what was then called the mystery system, they developed in the priesthood the seven liberal arts. It was in religion that man developed science. Not in science, man developed religion. Thus, there should be no conflict between religion and evolution if one knows what one is speaking about. There is no conflict when I say there's an evolutionary process that goes on when the mother receives the little seedling from the father. There's a tremendous amount of evolutionary processes go on in that stage before the child comes out. But that doesn't mean that the child doesn't come out with a spirit.
All right.
A soul. That inner self that we call that. I couldn't point you out the soul no more than you can, but you can feel it, you can understand it. Thus it is that when we talk about, I love you with all my heart, we as African people know that the heart cannot love. It is only a piece of muscle that pumps the blood, but we are saying it symbolically. Because in the Book of the Dead and the pyramid text and the coffin text, we show a picture of the heart being weighed against the feather of truth with the United States government. The Supreme Court symbol adopted, but still told us we got no history.
All right, all right.
Not only did they adopt that from us, but on the dollar bill, right on the green side of your dollar bill, there is your history. Not out of Kaylee's roots. It's not a thing. Everybody has got my roots in slavery. I'm talking way before anybody know me well, much less to enslave me. On that dollar bill, you see the symbol of the God concept symbolized by the sun and the pyramid, the house of fire, and the ever-clean eyes.
All right.
And in other places, that symbol which you used for Jesus in memory of Calvary originally started out as the Ankh, A-N-K-H, the key of life. Isn't it strange, or is it strange, that at Calvary Jesus would be placed on the same symbol, but you seem only to think of the death? But Jesus didn't preach the death. Jesus said, after this death, there is a life, a resurrection, and a life, which the African people had brought up traditionally. The scholarship of Jesus was not to be questioned. His years at the grandmother of Luxor, from age 12 to age 30, was not to be questioned because it was a scholarship undeniable. As his ancient teachers also call a priest. For it was as a boy went into the synagogue or to the center of worship, the grandmother of Luxor, at age 7, and he did not leave until 47. Then he was considered a priest. He had gotten the concept of the sunum bonum, the law of the greatest good. So that when the Greeks are talking, and anyone in your university, and I laugh when I hear my professors speaking about the Greeks giving us the concept of the law of the greatest good, and we don't have the Greeks in history until 833. This was written on the grandmother of Luxor, 5100 B.C. No less so than when we talk about dates. We could not come here this afternoon. You wouldn't know what to come were it not for a calendar. The calendar that your ancestors gave to the world in 10,000 B.C., which they then called a stellar calendar. That calendar not being accurate enough, your ancestors then revised it and created what was called the solar calendar with 365 and a quarter day corrected each 7th year. And it was another African from Ethiopia who found it necessary to change the calendar for Justinian from 365 she's the father of learning the West of Imhotep, the first known multi-genius in human history thousands of years before Michelangelo. Imhotep, who was the grand vizier, the prime minister, the physician, the man who designed the first pyramid, the man who gave us the term, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die.